Welcome back to the Minnesota Sports Insider Podcast. We hope we didn't scare you off last time. I heard a few people tell me that I sounded too bland and monotone last week, Brando. So I'm going to try and fix that today.
I am too.
With me in the studio today is none other than Brandon Gonzalez, who again you can find on Twitter at Gonzino_Dune, and myself at Coach Petermeyer. You can also find our Sports Insider page on Twitter at Inside Minnesota Sports. So Brandon, I've got an idea here. Instead of us, you and I here, sitting back and forth, talking about what we want to talk about, just jibber-jabbering back and forth, what if we were to have our listeners chime in and just tell us what they want to hear?
I like that. I like where that's going.
So, listeners out there, you can either send us a direct message on Twitter, at Inside Minnesota Sports. You can slide in those DMs. Or you can hit us up on our email, at MinnesotaSportsInsider@gmail.com. Again, our Twitter page is at Inside Minnesota Sports, and our email is MinnesotaSportsInsider@gmail.com. You can send us anything you want, any topics to talk about, whether it's the Vikings, Twins, Wild. We'll even dive into the links here if we need to for our listeners.
Oh, absolutely. I could not wait. I can't wait to do that.
So whatever you guys got, just shoot us an email or a tweet. We'll be happy to talk about what you guys want to talk about. But for today's podcast, with all of our, most I should say, of our professional sports teams being on the break in the beginning of their off season here, let's use this second podcast and this hour-long discussion to talk about our first-place Minnesota Twins. Not first place in our league, not first place in our division, but first place in all of the major leagues.
Really impressive. To be where we at, where we're at for the Minnesota Twins. So we're going to go through a couple things so everyone understands what we're doing in this podcast, at what points we're talking about what, so we're a little more organized than last week's first pod, okay? So this, we're going to give you the rundown. This is the Minnesota Twins rundown for today's podcast in from order from the beginning to the end. So first things first, we'd be talking about what's the driving force for why the Twins have came up with such a strong start to the first 35 games of the season. Then we're going to talk about buy or selling. We'll have a segment. We'll go through that. We'll have to explain it. We'll have to support it.
I think that's going to be a fun new topic that we're mixing in here.
I like it too. We'll see where it goes. You know, it could be a little rusty, but we'll see where it goes. We'll take a look at how the Twins' top prospects have done in the early parts of the 2019 season. We'll discuss players that have made major mechanical overhauls in the Twins organization. And we'll dive into breaking down Wes Johnson's immediate impact at the MLB level, at the AAA level, and trickling all the way down. Discussing another segment we're going to try out is Here's a Theory segment. We'll discuss the shortstop depth, the outfield depth, and some trade possibilities.
Those that know me know I'm a big trades guy. I would love to talk about some scenarios about if we can send out two prospects, who we getting back. Can it be a top-end starter? Can it be a reliever?
I think what we can do, as me and Brent, I think some of our strengths are, is we can play a more realistic card with some of the trade possibilities when we talk about that, as opposed to some other podcasts where we're just throwing out names and throwing out prayers. So we'll talk about some realistic possibilities. And then last but not least, we'll make your case with a hot take. It'll wrap up the podcast, anything surrounding the Minnesota Twins, and we'll end there. Should be about a 50-minute podcast. So,
here we go. Back to our first topic that we discussed earlier. Our thoughts through the first, or what is the driving force through the first 35 games of the season here? If I'm just to think about going back to last year, through the first 35 games, I want to say we are right around 16 and 19, 17 and 18. Somewhere right around there. I know we're under 500. What do you think is the major change in our season this year compared to last year, Brando? Has it been the addition of Rocco? Has it been Wes Johnson's impact on our staff? Because I think, like last week, we talked about him. And I think Wes Johnson has done a tremendous job with our staff, not just our major league staff, but all the way down through our minors and all our systems. Or has it been what Felvey and our front office has done with bringing in key free agents and veterans that know how to act in the clubhouse and know how to create a culture in a clubhouse.
Sure. Yeah, I think it's been about, I mean, it's everything. It's a cliche answer. For instance, getting a new manager, Rocco, getting him in there, transitioning over from Paul to Rocco, a young manager from old, different culture, different styles. Rocco coming from a more analytical base in Tampa, doing multiple jobs, having multiple roles in that organization. Kind of a versatile coach, young guy, young mind, willing to be relatable with the young players that we have coming up. Big for the Twins. Making the addition from Arkansas, Wes Johnson, and some of the things that he's brought over from Arkansas. And then some of the pieces, of course, that Thad Levine and Derek Falvey have added for us. We talked about that last week. But I think it's really important to evaluate why so many analytical departments, because every MLB team has an analytical department. And they have multiple people hired in that area with good resumes and backgrounds that support what they do. And they have a style. They have their own style. But what a lot of people have been talking about, and it seems to hold fairly true, is can you make that information, that new information, understandable to the players? And then I think for a lot of these players, because think about it, you're coming up from high school to college. Some of these guys just go straight into single A from high school. And then you look at, you know, why would they want to be like, some players honestly don't want that information because it crowds their mind, crowds their brain. It's too much information. It's information overload. But it's a guy like Wes Johnson that can synthesize the information, if you will, and then almost answer that question when he doesn't have to, why we're doing this. Why we're doing this, and why are we trying to give you this information? Why is this helping you? How does this help your career? And making it relevant, as simple as that sounds, like in simple education techniques, anywhere you go, it makes sense to the players that have been taught and have been so confident with their approach the whole way up. So Wes Johnson, that's been a big part. And I think James Rouston, the same kind of thing. His ability to explain to the hitters, this is why we're doing this. And then to show the data behind that. And then to see results early at the beginning of the year. I mean, we're 35 games in, and we have Oda Rizzi and Martin Perez, Jose Berrios. Missing one? Who else has done really well? And Kyle Gibson. Those four, I mean, not to shame Michael Pineda, but he's our fifth starter. But those four other starters have been great in every more than what we could have expected. So obviously everything is the answer to your question, Brent. But at the same time, it's the communication that maybe we did not have at such a high level last year.
Definitely. I think a big part to me is, like you said, our scouting department and our analytics people have done a fantastic job of just getting numbers out there of what works and what doesn't work. Telling our infielders where to shift compared to where hitters like to pull the ball or hit opposite, or just whatever the information that we're getting is so good that, I mean, it's effective that what we're doing.
Yep.
And I think that Rocco has played a huge part in what we're doing right now. We may not see it on the field, or you may not recognize what he's doing, but what he has done to put us in positions to win every night and win every day has been fantastic. The way he was, like we talked about last week, how he is getting everybody involved. He is not letting a Jake Cave sit in the bench for longer than 3 days. He's not letting Ari Adranza sit in the bench for more than 4 days. He's getting these guys involved so that when their number's called, they're ready to go. And they're coming into the game and they're not shell-shocked because I've been sitting on the bench and now I'm rusty and now I haven't got my at-bats or I haven't fielded a baseball or I haven't... Whatever it is, he has just been so vocal in getting everybody to go and just knowing what to do during the course of a game.
And I like what Baldelli has really done with our bullpen. Can you say that our bullpen's dominant? No. Can you say that we're throwing gas every guy out? No.
We do have one of the best bullpen arms in the league, though.
We do. But to save that point, with Baldelli, I really like, whether it's him and Wes Johnson or even higher up, Derek Falvey and Levine, whoever that's coming from and that original base is from, I really like how we're managing the bullpen. What I mean is Taylor Rogers. There's a reason. Well, look at his stats. He has right now 4 saves. He's not Josh Hader in terms of he's going to get 50 saves at the end of the year. We don't have a set in stone closer, which I think is an old thing. It's outdated. Because what happens in a important game, like a playoff game, a win-and-in situation, you don't know the situation. You don't get your 7, 8, 9 inning guys every time because your starter's not going 6 every time in the playoffs. And you don't know if for some reason your best guy, Twins, and for the Twins instance, Rogers is just not feeling his fastball and he can't command it and you got to get him out. I like, because now what Baldelli's doing is, let's say it's a 2-1 ball game. And Berríos is coming off the mound in the 6th inning. And they got a guy at second base. Baldelli is putting the guy that has the best matchup every time, for the most part, to get us out of the close situations. He's not saying, well, we have to save Rogers for the 9th. No, he's saying, this is the most important part of the ball game. We're up by 1. Let's get our best pitcher in to match up.
And speaking of closers, we can have a little fun with our theory segment at the end of the pod here, talking about different kind of, maybe a trade or two we can bring in, or maybe there's a free agent out there that is sitting on his couch and he wants to get into a pennant race here pretty quick. Did I say pennant race? That's fun to talk about here in the beginning of May.
Honestly, really is.
Would you have thought at the beginning of the year that we could be talking pennant race right now? Sitting 4 games up?
I did. I did not think necessarily 4 games up. But I believe that we are an 88-90 win team from day one. And then to defend my point, I said this from day one, the lineup from the Indians, you knew, even with a healthy Ramirez and Lindor and honestly whoever else they got a lot of Leonis Martins, their third best hitter, slash Cargo. They don't have a great lineup, and they don't. Like, you can see that on paper. Beginning of the season, even if you're pessimistic to the moves we made, like, CJ Cron is the same thing as Logan Morrison. No, he's not. But if you want to think that, that's fair, I guess. And the thing is that we're going to have better hitting than the whole year. They're going to have better starting pitching than us. Well, then they had injuries. And if there's injuries at all in their starting rotation, their bullpen's already a question mark. Their hitting's almost last in the AL. There's not much to be excited for if you're an Indians fan. You're scraping your teeth every time you're winning a game. You're winning 3-2. You're getting the Indians had 3 walk-off hits this year. Good for them. I guess that's some momentum. But is that really the way they're using their bullpen and their usage rate, they are going to burn out their bullpen because of these close games. Like, yes, their starters are getting deep into games, the Indians. Their starters are getting deep into the games, and you think, well, if Carrasco and Shane Bieber go deep into ball games, well, you don't have to really use your bullpen. Wrong. I think the usage rate is overrated in terms of innings pitch sometimes, but in terms of pressure situations, when you got to put your best pitcher out there in a 2-1 ball game, he's going to throw his fastball with all his might, and he's going to use everything in his body a little bit more than a 6-2 ball game. You know what I mean? In the 9th inning. So, from day one, I think the Twins were a better team this year. The question is how many games can we seriously get ahead of the Indians?
I've got a question here for you. We're 4 up right now, sitting on what are we, May 9th right now?
Yeah.
Can we get a 7-game lead before the All-Star break?
Yeah, why not? I mean, I know the Indians from May 9th now until about June 20th. They have a fairly easy schedule. They don't have that. It's not the hardest part of their schedule. But if I don't see why we can't. We got the Detroit Tigers coming in. Then we have the Angels coming in. And then we have the Mariners, Angels, and White Sox. And in that 13-game stretch, I don't see a reason why we can't win at least half of those again. So, to answer your question, to at least June, we could be at least 5 games up. I mean, maybe 6. And to the All-Star game, you have a series right before right before the start of, like, the hard part of the schedule for the Twins comes in June with the Indians. That's a big series to me. It's the first time we'll see Lindor and Ramirez, and potentially Mike Clevinger will be back by that date. So they'll just be missing Corey Kluber, who happened to get injured, like, what, half an hour after we had our last podcast?
Right, yeah.
So that was kind of crazy. But, yeah, I mean...
Here's the fun part about this, though, is... Except for tonight, when we're taping this, we have an off day. Starting tomorrow, with our game against Detroit, we go 13 straight days with baseball. 13 days and 14 games. We have a doubleheader on Saturday against the Tigers. And then we have baseball for 13 straight days. That's going to be a great 2 weeks to sit and watch your Minnesota Twins. Hopefully, like we just talked about, get that lead in the AL Central up. In case there's that stress during the season where we lose three or four in a row, which I do not see that happening with this team. When we get beat, like we talked about last week, we come out the next day, and the next game we put up six runs.
Yeah.
And Jose Berrios comes in and he throws seven innings strong and gives up one. So there's a lot to be excited about with this team heading forward.
We're gonna go into the buy or sell segment. Okay, so what we're gonna do here, I know a lot of people are very familiar with this because it's a common segment to do in a lot of sport things. We're just gonna talk about the Twins, some players, some topics, not even necessarily players. We're both gonna answer if we buy or sell the possible subject.
All right, so I've got one to lead off here. Do you want me to give you a player, or should I give you the stats and you can take a crack at who the player is?
Give me a player.
Okay, let's talk about Jorge Polanco.
Okay.
Through the first 35 games here, he is hitting .344 with 14 RBIs, 7 home runs, and 22 runs scored. Do you see that happening throughout the year continuing?
If you wrote out his projected stats right now, no, because I don't think the average will stay that high. But you look at what Polanco has been doing. I really believe before the start of the season that he is a very similar product to a Robinson Cano, and he has similar hand speed through the zone as like Jose Ramirez. Is he a 300 hitter this year? Yeah. I think he's at worst a 290 hitter this season. So, I mean, that's borderline all-star, especially at the position you're hitting from, shortstop. And his on-base, his takes, the ability to take a curveball just out of the zone when it looks like it's in the zone 80% of the time it's traveling is impressive, especially when two strikes is happening. His two-strike approach is really nice. He seems to battle back from 1-2, and he gets it to 3-2, and now it's his account, and he's in favor. Polanco's super impressive with his power. It's been different this year. His most home runs he's ever hit in a year has been 13, and that was the year before last season because he was suspended half the year last year. And yes, he did hit, like, I think it was 7 home runs or 6 home runs in 80 games last year. And he hit really well. But I think he can be at least a 290 hitter, 300 hitter this year. I don't see why he can't hit 25 home runs. He's got a nice swing, and it seems like it's very repeatable, and he can do it against the best. So I buy it. I buy it to the extent that is he an all-star? Yeah. Is he going to keep doing these 340 type numbers? That would be batting title, like, area. That'd be the area of, like, where a 340, that's where I see a batting title champion this year. I don't think it's going to stay that high, but I buy the fact that he is an all-star type player.
This next one, I think, let's do instead of buying or selling this one, give me a over-under for this player.
Okay.
Right now, Byron Buxton has 7 stolen bases through 33 games. He's played in 33 out of our 35 games so far. Let's go plus or minus 32 stolen bases in the season for Buxton.
If he plays at least 130 games, he'll get that. He'll get that. And he won't do it at quite a successive rate as he did last year. He don't think he got picked off last year.
Right now, he is projected to play in 153 games and have 32 stolen bases.
I think he'll end up with more. I think the Byron Buxton is a guy who, if you, it doesn't matter, single A, double A, triple A, he always has started off slow to seasons. And people are like, yes, he's doing better this year. I still question if he can refine his approach with the curveball and what he's going to do with that, instead of letting some fastballs go by, because he still has done that. Yes, his average is up to 250 something, and his on base is, you know, respectable, and he's leading the league in doubles, or at least the AL. But I think there's room for, I mean, I really believe that Buxton's not taking that next step that we saw in 2017, when he had that second half breakout the last 2 months. He hit like 9 home runs in the month of September, or was that August and September, something crazy like that. I think that has yet to be shown, but just let the summer come and the weather to get a little warmer. I'm worried because I'm worried for other teams in the AL Central, because Marvin Gonzalez has not been himself yet.
We've got Sano still in AAA to come up.
Sano hasn't came up, and Buxton's still not even there yet. So,
I think even with, you said those two guys that we have still that haven't started anything with,
yeah,
with Gonzalez and Sano, there's a guy in the minors right now that we could call up and he'd be major league ready. If we were to call up Alex Kirilloff right now, that's just another piece of the puzzle that we could. I think Kirilloff is up by the end of the year.
It would be impressive to me to see Kirilloff in our lineup. I would love to see him in our lineup. I think his bat's ready. I don't know where you'd play him. They say right field, they say first base. I'm not sure where you'd play him, where you'd find him time, because you have to take away someone else's time, and our bench is already loaded. That's, to me, that would probably have to happen if Acedillo and Sano go on the injured list in a Buxton or something. But I don't quite see Alex Kirilloff coming up. But there's always hope with injuries, you know, in that regard. You don't want to ever see that. But, yeah, Alex Kirilloff, he's coming. And you better bet that Max Kepler or CJ Cron or whoever spot he's eventually going to fill next year, they understand that. Okay, and I know Kepler's under contract for a while.
And I think that's the good thing, though, with the contract we gave CJ Cron. What's he on, 1 year? Mm-hmm. Approve a deal?
Yeah.
Boom, he's out, and here comes Alex Kirilloff.
Yep.
Right fielder that can play first base with power.
Yep. Yeah, and we're not even talking about, we're not even talking about next year yet. Rightfully so, but that's a scary lineup to think about with that. So, but I'm going to ask you a question for buy or sell. Buy or sell, Eddie Rosario is a 40 home run hitter, and he's a Gold Glove winner.
A Gold Glove winner is going to be very hard to convince me of right now. I'd like to see him continue. I mean, he's had a great start to the year, as of all our Twins have had. But can he get to being a Gold Glove winner? I think so. I think our outfield right now is really special. You just watch the throws that Rosario makes from the left. He's gunning guys out from all over the field.
Dick Bramer says it best. It's where doubles die.
Just him and Buxton out there covering all that ground, and then the arm that they both have,
yeah,
is ridiculous. They can throw guys out from the wall on a line. It's insane how they're doing. And then your other question was 40 home runs for,
mm-hmm, yep,
for Rosie. Right now he is sitting at 13, leading the team. 13 through 35. I'm going to take the under on 40 home runs. I'm going to have him sitting right around that 33 to 37-ish number for the season. So I think he's going to be under the 40.
You're selling it.
I'm selling the 40.
You're selling it. Okay. All right. And buy or sell on Max Kepler becoming an all-star this year.
This season, Max Kepler being an all-star, I'm going to sell that as well.
Yeah.
Has his bat come around. He has hit the ball really well this year, and he's got a really good eye for the plate. But when he has, when he's in the field, I just don't think he is in that upper echelon category yet of outfielders like Rosie and Buxton are at that possibly Gold Glove / all-star level right now. I don't think Kepler's there, but I do think that his bat is there. In the essence that when you sit down and watch a game and you see Max Kepler walk out to the plate to start the game, to start the year, I was a little eerie of how he would be as a leadoff. And then he proved it in his first at-bat of the year when he swung and pulled that ball to right field. I didn't think he'd have the patience to be a leadoff hitter, but boy, has he proved me wrong. He is in there taking 7 or 8 pitches deep into an at-bat, and then he either walks or he pulls a single or a double to right center.
He's got a strange approach to me because you don't see a lot of, well, that's not true, but you don't see a lot of first leadoff hitters swing a lot at the first pitch, but that's not true now in modern day baseball, I guess, because Curtis Granderson kind of led that wave 10 years ago. He would sometimes swing a lot at the first pitch, but he's kind of strange. I wonder if he could just refine his approach a little bit where it's more consistent, because sometimes it seems like he gets out twice in one game on one pitch at bats, and maybe that's not. If analytical research told us that maybe it's not a bad idea because he's getting the pitch he wants to hit, which is a fastball, and he's just getting underneath it and he's popping out. Maybe that could argue my argument, but he's impressive. But it'd be really nice to see Max Kepler kind of work accounts more consistently. He has done that, but I'd like to see a little more consistency if he's going to be the leadoff hitter versus a right-handed pitcher, because when a lefty is pitching, they've shown that Baldelli will put him in the 7th slot in the lineup, or the 6th slot.
Or even take him out all in general. Yeah. He'll just sit for that day if you got a lefty.
And I've kind of noticed, I don't know, for those that watch a lot of the games, that, you know, why do we throw the changeup in baseball? Why is the changeup the most off-speed pitches for this year? It's the most increased pitch thrown from past years. It's because of the home runs, to slow down the bat, speed, to take away the velocity off the ball when it's being hit. But you know, when Max Kepler is going against a lefty, his bat speed slows down. It's almost a more defensive swing, which worries me to this point. I know he's only had a handful of bats versus lefties, but that does concern me to an extent as him being a true leadoff guy.
Let's switch gears here and not go buy or sell with our roster. Let's look at a few teams out there that could have an impact on where the Twins sit at the end of the year. Let's start with, we kind of can combine this question, I think. It's been in my head for a while. Just looking out at the AL East, what's going on there, do you think the Red Sox struggle is real? And do you think that 3 teams come out of the AL East for the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, you look at the AL West, I see the Mariners, the Rangers, the Athletics, all struggling.
Okay. And the Mariners started off, what, 12-4?
12-something like that. And, I mean, it's the Astros division, clearly. We don't need to talk about that too much.
There's no competition out there for the Astros. Yeah,
especially with their top 5 batters that go 1-2-3-4-5, Bregman, Correa, Altuve, Brantley.
You know, Uriel.
They have a very impressive, but the Mariners, they don't have the pitching. They do hit a lot of homers, but they do strike out a lot. They're on base. Like, the Twins have a different offense than the Mariners. Yes, they hit home runs, but they also, it's like, they're so aggressive, but they can also be, when you're going to try to, like, throw a ball, we're going to take it.
Just look at last night when we had in the first inning, we had bases loaded, 2 outs.
Yep.
And here's Marlon Gonzalez taking a 3-2 inside pitch. He's walking to first base, and here comes a run.
And that happens. Like, we're not giving up the other team outs, and we're definitely not selling ourselves short on these at-bats. We're fighting, and it's every at-bat. We're the Mariners. I don't see that. The Athletics, they have some guys. They have some pieces. They have Chapman. They have Chris Davis. They have pieces. They still have Steven Piscotty. They have pieces there, but Mike Fiers throws a no-hitter the other day, but I still just don't see, even listening to the GM talk from the Athletics about where they're at, it doesn't seem like he's convinced that they're going to be at any point buying this season, and I don't see why he would.
So, and there could be a good selling piece on that team that I think we could be interested in, we could talk about later.
Yeah, we could talk about that. And with, you know, the Angels, I don't know what's going on. I mean, maybe it's a superficial belief in Ohtani and Trout leading the way.
Speaking of trades here, let's send up Nick Gordon
Let's get back to that in a second, okay? Let's just get back to that. We let's talk about the Angels, because I don't see the Angels going anywhere again, because they don't have a starting rotation. They lose Garrett Richards. I don't know if that's a huge deal or not. They don't have... Shohei Ohtani is supposed to be their guy from last year. I don't know where they're expecting to add. Mike Trout is 27 years old. Has not had more than a dozen at-bats in a playoff game. And he's lost his only playoff games. Then looking at the Rangers, really good batting lineup. Joey Gallo's kind of taking off. He's still striking out a lot, but his average has gone up. But again, the Rangers have absolutely no pitching staff. Their best pitcher is Mike Minor. That's not ever a good thing. There is no way if I'm talking about today, watching, because I've watched all those teams play, that there's any team. Maybe the Mariners can push for 85 to 88 wins for the second wild card, but I still don't think that's enough, because let's go to the East. The AL East has the Tampa Bay Rays, who are real.
They won 90 games last year and didn't make the playoffs.
Quietly, yeah. Quietly, when the Red Sox win 108, and the Yankees win darn near 100 wins, and they get 90. They don't even, and that's tough. You're 20 games basically over 500, not a lot of people recognizing, and you don't get a lot of recognition with, you know, extra pay and bonuses and stuff like that. And then you look at their rotation, it's so, they have the best rotation right now in the MLB. They have Tyler Glasnow, lights out. Tyler Glasnow is as impressive as Chris Paddock. Won't talk about him today, but absolute two new superstars in the MLB. And then you go from Tyler Glasnow to Blake Snell. And then you go from Blake Snell to Charlie Morton, who has won a World Series. That's a very deep rotation. We're still not talking about some of the younger pieces they have on their team, with one of the best bullpens in the AL. So the Rays look to be a sure thing to be at least, at the worst, 85 win team, but they're probably going to be in the 90 to 95. And Boston, let's talk about that. Are the Red Sox struggles real?
I want to say no, I really do. But just from what they have seen or have shown so far, look at Chris Sale. Chris Sale has been just atrocious this year.
Besides the last start he made.
Yep. I think that you look at their lineup, what hitters and what pitchers have really done well for them to start the year. I mean, they've struggled immensely.
And with the Red Sox, the lineup's not gonna, I'm sorry, but their lineup is gonna figure it out. You have too much talent with Mookie Betts, too much hand-eye coordination, too much quick hands, too many guys that don't like to strike out very quickly. When you have that, J.D. Martinez is about to go off.
Yeah, Xander Bogaerts. Boston, the Red Sox. Jackie Bradley. I really, really like Andrew Benintendi.
And Andrew Benintendi is as good as it comes for his on-base percentage is going to be extremely high on top of the league every year. His average is going to always be around 300, 290.
Mitch Marlin, who was really good in Texas and Seattle.
Great. I mean, he's a great addition. And you got an all-star shortstop.
That's all-star third baseman, Rafael Devers.
And Devers is really good. Jackie Bradley, you know, he's trying to figure it out, but his defense is always impressive. And Mookie Betts is the real center fielder in that team with Pesky Pole in right field. But, yeah, it's just you can't shut out that offense for too long.
And I think before too long, they're going to come around on the offensive side. But for them to go anywhere right now and for them to get back on track being under 500, their pitching's going to have to come around.
Yeah, they don't have quite... They don't have Dave Pomeranz anymore. They had him. Porcello, I don't, you know. David Price has kind of been, you know, he's been good this year. And Chris Sale has been, you know, up and down. But their pitching's not as strong. Their bullpen's not as strong. They don't have Kimbrel. They don't have the weird, nasty, what I liked what the Red Sox did in the past is they get a very different look from their bullpen. They'd have one guy could throw gas from the right side, and they'd have one guy can throw gas from the left side, and then they have a guy throw a sidearm from the right side. They have all these different looks, so it's not as repetitive as how the Yankees do. They got guys throwing all 99 and all from the same arm slot. That, to me, doesn't work always, especially because the MLB, everyone's getting used to the MPH is going higher and higher, and the batters are used to it. That's the more and more you think you can fool a hitter at 98, the same pitch over and over again, it will not work out. But are the Red Sox going to win the AL East? I don't think so. It's really early to tell, but it's impressive what the Yankees are doing. I'm personally really worried about the Yankees, not just from the fact that the Twins have really been bad against them the last 15, 20 years, and it almost feels like forever, but they beat us again. One of them was a rain out, or we played to the eighth inning, they canceled it. The Yankees were winning, we lose. We were going to lose that game, but they beat us without a lot of their really, really
good players. How good do they look? And they have a lot of their guys on the injured list right now.
Like Clint Frazier, I don't know if a lot of people know that name. Go check him out. He can ball. He was one of their best players the first two, 3 weeks. He's only played like 15 games, and the guy has like 7 home runs and a really nice average, and walks to strikeout ratio is not exactly what you'd expect. It's even better. And then you have Aaron Judge. He's not playing. He has an oblique strain. You don't have D.D. Gregorius because he's coming off Tommy John from last fall. He's coming back in after the All-Star break. You don't have your best pitcher, Severino. You get Severino and Domingo Herman, and those guys can really light it up. They can strike out some guys, and they can eat up some innings. And they have some wild, wild mechanics that kind of throw off hitters with deception. And we're not even talking about the Brett Gardners, the Gary Sanchez's. Gary Sanchez has, 11 home runs, and I'm pretty sure he's missed about 12 games this year. And this catcher from the Yankees, Gary Sanchez, has been one of the best hitters in baseball. And when he gets his bat whatsoever on the ball, it seems like it's coming out at like over 100 miles per hour. And you look at Fangraphs, and Fangraphs has Gary Sanchez listed as the highest, he has some of the highest velocities off the bat, averaging over 105 miles per hour when not a ground ball. That's first in the MLB currently. So the Yankees, for me, when they get everyone back, when they get whatever Chad Green's up to and their bullpen established and Aroldis Chapman is there and he has support, the Yankees are the cream of the crop for me in the AL East. Tampa looks great. Austin Meadows is a star. Brendan Lau is a star. But I just don't think you can hold off the Yankees for that long with that lineup. That lineup, for me, is the best in baseball when everyone's healthy.
So if we're going off of that logic here, we're talking about the Yankees and the Rays being 90 to 95 plus win teams.
At least.
Do the Twins need to win the Central to get in the playoffs?
Oh, yeah. You have to win the Central. You do not want to go into a one-game playoff and pretend that, you know, we got this. No, let's go into a 5-game series.
Let's hope we don't get into 1-game playoff and have to go to Yankee Stadium again, because that's going to be...
No. I mean, it's a 50-50, and for all the work you do, for all the series that you play, it already doesn't make sense that you're playing a 1-game series. It makes sense from the marketing standpoint, and it gets a lot of followers and views, but from a pure baseball standpoint, as a baseball player and a coach, probably in that dugout, you really don't want to go to that 1-game playoff, you know, unless you're coming from a situation like the Twins were a couple years ago, from a 60-win team to a playoff team, which was the first time it's ever been done. 100-loss team to a playoff team the next year, first time it's ever been done, when Paul Molitor was coaching. That was cool, but this is a team that has expectations, and if we... I think it'd be disappointing to not at least see the Twins get 3 games in the playoffs this year.
All right, let's switch gears here and let's talk about... I want to talk about some of our prospects that we have down in our minor leagues right now that we could possibly bring up here in September call-ups to get them some at-bats in the majors and just get them a feel for it. Or we could always wait until next year to do it. But these guys that we're going to talk about are probably some of our top 10 guys. Let's only talk about maybe 3 or 4 of them here, but they're all going to be in our top 10, except for one guy that I know you, Brandon, don't have a big crush on.
Yeah.
But let's talk about Bruce Doug Gratterall to start with.
Oh, man.
We were talking about this earlier today when I was texting you before I got over here. He got injured last night, and it was kind of a scare when we saw it. But luckily, it was just a precautionary pulling him out of the game before something catastrophic happened. He's supposed to start next week, but that could have been bad.
Yeah, I saw that. I got the update from Brent in the middle of the day, and I'm like, oh, no, please, no. Don't let this be the Fernando Romero thing. Don't let this stop his career now for what? Another, basically, it'd be this year, next year, and then probably the next, you know.
Because him right now in the minors is looking, he's on the path quite similar to our ace, Jose Barrios. He is, if in the next 2 or 3 years we can get a 1-2 punch of Barrios and Gratterall, things are looking up.
And before I add on that, we're going to make a part two to this podcast. So we get another, we're probably going to get another 20 minutes in, 20 or so minutes in. So we're going to do two parts of the Twins thing today. If you want to listen to each, we'll list what's going on so you can pick and choose what you want to listen to. But building off the Brusdar Gratterall thing, yeah, is relieving. It brings a sense of happiness to hear that he's okay. It seems like, like you said, it was just to make sure that nothing happened after that. And he'll be playing, like you said, in his next, he'll be pitching his next start as expected, according to the manager, that when he came out and talked about it to the press this morning. So that's all good things to hear. Gratterall's got some of the nastiest stuff. Like, when Barrios was coming up at the same exact age, Barrios was throwing 91, 92, 93, and nothing much higher than 94 through the same ages. And you look at Gratterall, very similar control and command, okay? And Barrios had a little issues with it, but not a lot. Gratterall, similar with that, has a wipeout slider. I mean, he's got potentially 3-plus pitches and 1-plus-plus pitch in his fastball that looks like a 2-seam sinker that's going to run in on your hands and break your bat every time. But if Gratterall can, if Gratterall can just stay healthy, I think this year it's big. There's no reason why Gratterall can't get and finish with AAA this year. You'd think that Gratterall, they kept him to 100 and, I believe, 140 innings last year in the minor leagues between single A and low A and all those things and a little bit of two or three teams. So I'm thinking that they're going to try to get him to about 140 to 150 innings again this year. Fairly similar. And I just don't see him getting called up. I mean, I don't know if it, I just don't know if it would be the right situation to put him in our bullpen if we decide to go that route instead of acquiring another guy out there at the trade deadline. But I'm excited to see Gratterall play next year. He'll be playing next year, I think. At least 2020 September call-ups, I think you'll see him.
Let's switch on here. Let's talk about somebody that when we drafted him, he was supposed to be the up-and-coming, the next second baseman / shortstop coming through our farm system. Let's talk about Nick Gordon, or as he also goes by his rap name, G-Cinco.
G-Cinco! Oh, man. I don't want to bash on this guy too much because he's an MLB baseball player. I'm just sitting here talking about sports. But I am not a big fan of Nick Gordon. And let me tell you this. Go pull up Nick Gordon's stats. He was out the whole first month and basically spring training, parts of it, listed as gastritis. I believe I got that correct. Gastritis. And in that time, he also released, what his other name is, G-Cinco. He came out with a new song on YouTube.
G-Cinco, go listen to him. Pull up YouTube.
And there was a music video, right?
But there was music videos for all of his songs.
It was produced. It was produced and all those good things. But so why is he having gastritis problems and making these songs in Florida? It doesn't make any sense to me, but I mean, good for him. The guy can multitask. I guess he can have gastritis and make songs, but not play baseball.
Whatever. Go take a listen to G-Cinco Offseason or G-Cinco Goat.
It's not bad. He's a good little rapper. He's not bad. He's really solid, but
I wish he was that good at baseball.
But you know what? Let's look at his stats. He's played 5 games this year, only 5, but this is the best start off he's ever had in the upper minors.
Has he climbed back into your top 10?
If we're
you got
trying,
that man crush again?
If we're trying to write that article for other opposing teams, I would put him in my top 10 and immediately erase it after that. But Maybe he is, but he's for some reason hitting lights out. This last week, he hit over 420, roughly 420. He had four doubles this week, and all of a sudden, all this power is coming to fruition. And maybe other teams are like, well, we got a 23-year-old. He's related to D. Gordon. His dad also was good at baseball. He's now figuring something out. He's still young. He's got a good arm. There's value. Go trade him in the next month. Pray that he stays healthy. Pray that his average stays above 300. And you can always find value in a 23-year-old shortstop, especially when his bloodlines run real deep.
What if we were to package Nick Gordon along with a Cole Stewart / Steven Gonsalves? Could we get a lower end of the rotation guy or a bullpen guy to bring in and help us make a push for the postseason?
That would be interesting, because I think you want to give Nick Gordon a chance, but at the same time, look at what the Twins have done. People ask, why are the Twins drafting shortstops and middle infielders and center fielders come like over and over again? It's to have too much of something. And
okay, but if we look at, we've got Nick Gordon right now, who's a shortstop / second baseman. We've got our number one prospect and what, number four in all of baseball in Royce Lewis. And then we have our number 4/5 prospect in our farm system, Wander Javier. And then we have Jorge Polanco, who's in the majors right now. That's four. And you can even add Arian Duranza.
No way.
Well, I'm just saying at that position. Yeah, right. At that position.
And you're forgetting the biggest piece. And go, if you want to look it up, Luis Arias is absolutely destroying the ball. He's our currently...
So there's...
Royce Lewis is our best prospect at the middle infield position. And Wander Javier probably next year will be our second if we keep on to him. But our best prospect right now for value is Luis Arias. The guy, look, his stats don't make sense.
So that's six guys for two positions. Why would we not trade Nick Gordon and a pitcher? Because we've seen what Cole Stewart is. We've seen Cole Stewart in multiple occasions this past year and last year.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I'm saying like, yes, you want to give Nick Gordon a chance. But maybe you do one of those things where, because I know the Yankees did it for Chapman, like you just package up, or the Cubs with the Yankees, you just package up multiple shortstops. Like Gleyber Torres was a part of that deal back when the Yankees and the Cubs were going at it and all that stuff. Like give a team like Nick Gordon and like Luis Arias or Wander Javier, if you want to get something serious, I would do that. Like my question is like, yeah, we can package up Nick Gordon with Cole Stewart. But do you want to package up Nick Gordon straight up for an expiring contract of a pitcher?
Let's talk about that for a minute. We have some... I should say I've got some guys here that I've kind of wanted to look at and kind of wanted us to possibly maybe trade for to solidify ourselves as one of the top-tier teams in the AL. I was looking at some things here, and there was one of the MLB reporters that linked us to Madison Bumgarner from the San Francisco Giants, who is a World Series proven pitcher. What would we need to give up? Would we need to give up a top tier like a Royce Lewis for Mad Bum? I think they would start with that. I would start with no less than that if I'm the Giants. But if I'm the Twins, there's no way I'm giving up any of my top three prospects for an expiring.
Or they're asking for Gratterall, or they're asking for Kirilloff. No way.
I'm not giving up. There's three names I'm circling that are going to be untouchable.
For a 33-year-old starting pitcher, he's a lefty. We only got one in our rotation, but we're facing mainly, look at the teams that we're facing that will be playing the playoffs. Dominant teams from the right side of the plate. Houston, four of their best hitters are from the right side of the plate. The Yankees, four of their best hitters are from the right side of the plate.
But like, you and I have talked about here for quite some time now, for the past week or two, just going back and forth with us talking about this kind of stuff. We have developed a really, really good relationship with the Giants front office.
Yeah.
So with that relationship going back and forth and us having prospects.
And we mean the two trades that happened the last month with Tyler Austin and another prospect that we traded. But keep going.
We have prospects that they could use, multiple second basemen / shortstops. So could we try our package up like a Nick Gordon and somebody for like a Will Smith?
Yeah. Would you be okay losing Nick Gordon? Because I think I would be okay with, I know, you know, like if you feel comfortable that you can re-sign Will Smith when his contract comes to an end, I'm okay with that.
I think I would go Nick Gordon, Cole Stewart right now for Will Smith.
I mean, I don't know if they'd be having to ask for more than Nick Gordon, because Nick Gordon he was once upon a time, not so long ago, 16 months ago, in the top 100 prospects 16 months ago. And there has been no severe catastrophic injuries. It was just, he was a little bit slow to develop last year at the age of 22, which is nothing crazy. So, would I do that? Absolutely. Will Smith is a guy to look at, a lefty reliever from the Giants, has shown success, has been in World Series, has pitched big innings in the playoffs, and has shown and has a track record to get guys out in big situations, having a 3.3 ERA.
So we kind of went back and forth a little earlier about the Oakland Athletics and their situation, and are they buying or are they selling right now? I think in their best interest, it would be to sell and get as many prospects as you can right now to build along with your core that you have in Chapman and Chris Davis and Stephen Piscotty. They have a back end of the rotation guy right now that might be one of the best in all of baseball in Blake Treinen.
Mm-hmm.
If they're in sell mode, what would we need to give up to get a top? I'll put him in the top five closers in the game right now. What would we have to give up to get him?
Well, I would. They would probably have to look at Wander Javier. He's a ways away. His estimation time is about 2022, 2023. But you'd have to put at least two grade B plus prospects, like a Javier, maybe a Nick Gordon. Do they want two middle infielders, or do they want a pitcher to replace him and a middle infielder? You know, Trevor Larnach is 22 years old. We just drafted him last year from Oregon State. Is he a possibility that could be traded? Brent Rooker, to me, has not enough value. His age is 24, turning 25. He's way too many strikeouts. I don't, for people that want to say, hey, Brent Rooker, what could we get for a guy who hits a ton of home runs? Well, fortunately, the MLB doesn't value guys that hit a ton of home runs and strike out a lot. It has low batting average. It's not a lot of value in today's modern game, unless you're strongly needing home runs. So I don't see a lot of value in that. Lamonte Wade's an option. He's kind of been in that, there's no room for him in the outfield. JK is shown to be a little bit better than him. He's faster. He's got a, you know, slightly better arm than Wade. Lamonte Wade is phenomenal at getting on base. Look at his on base in the minor leagues. It's like a career 390, nearly 400. Okay, and this year it's something even higher than that. But Lamonte Wade's got age. So I would have to say, like, if you want to package up a couple of our middle infielders that we've listed and maybe Steven Gonsalves, that's what it would probably take. A Nick Gordon, a Wander Javier, a Steven Gonsalves, maybe a Luke Raley from AAA to a guy who's on the fringe outfielder. It would have to be one of those trades.
I think that if we want to make a trade for a back end of the rotation guy, it's going to have to be somebody young and somebody with club control. And I think one of the bigger names, I don't know if you know who this guy is, Brandon, but Jose Leclerc from Texas. I was doing some research today and this guy popped up and he is now one of my favorite pitchers right now just because of what he's doing. He is 25 years old and he's got club control until 2023. In 2018, in 60 appearances, he had a 1.5 ERA and 14 strikeouts per 9 innings as a closer.
See, and those kind of trades make more sense to me if I'm a GM, because not only do you have the control and a reasonable salary upon arbitration, but I think there's a lot less risk. There's a lot less risk with guys like that when you have to sign, when you're trading for a guy that is proven, but has less user control ability. It starts to become did we make a mistake? Because how many times have we had to ask ourselves, as Twins fans, did we make the right move?
Like, I think right now would be a great time to trade for him, just because right now through 15 games, he's pitched 13 innings, he's got 14 hits and 10 earned runs. So right now his ERA has boomed to 6.5 this year, and I think it could be a good time. Now that he has slowed down a bit, maybe we can get him for cheaper, not necessarily on a dime or on a penny, but less than what he could have gone for last year after that 1.5 ERA and 13 Ks per nine.
Yeah. I wonder what our organization truly believes of Gonsalves. He's still on the injured list today. Still hasn't pitched this year, as far as I'm concerned. I wonder if Tyler J would be in the trading block. Guys that just... Tyler J just seems like he's just been taking a long time. There's just some names that I think regardless, you're going to see more than one or two trades before, during, around the trade deadline.
Well, we need to be buyers.
You're going to see, but I don't think it's going to be a big time acquisition. I don't think we're going to get Madison Bumgarner unless they're willing just to accept Nick Gordon and a mid-level B prospect pitcher. I don't see how we're going to make a major move because most of the guys that are on the trade block that are big players in the NL specifically are unfortunately not under control for a long time.
I've got one pitcher here who's a starter that could be somebody we could take a look at to shore up the back end of our rotation here instead of Michael Pineda. But time is running short. Let's cut this segment here. We'll be back in about 5 minutes to wrap up everything, and then we'll send out our second pod. We'll get that recorded, and we'll get that out to our fans. So any closing thoughts here, Brandon, in the last 2 minutes?
Not much on this, but we're going to talk when we come back, continue to talk about the trade, some of the trades that are possible, realistic fits and needs that the Twins might have.
So we'll take a quick break, and we'll be back. Thanks for listening to the Minnesota Sports Insider. We're back here in the Minnesota Sports Insider Podcast. We last left off talking about a few different trade scenarios and things that could happen to shore up our back end of our rotation or our relief pitchers to give us depth and give us solidarity moving forward going into the closing stretch. I should say the middle stretch of the season and then going down towards the pennant race. But there was a piece here that I think Brandon wanted to talk about that we really didn't mention in that first part. So what was that, Brandon?
I want to talk about Nick Gordon's the process of his swing. His swing has changed. You look at 2018 to now. He added, crucially, one thing was the leg kick. The vaunted leg kick. We have not seen Nick Gordon swing with this style in the past. And we've seen small steps, maybe a small hold with the leg kick, but this is a severe leg kick with his batting stance. And you're seeing a lot more power. You're seeing his hands come through the zone more. I'm just surprised how fast it's already translating.
Are you talking like a leg kick like Josh Donaldson? Or a leg kick like...
Early stages of Buxton when he kind of tried it out. You know, he's really relying on timing, which is interesting for me. Is you look at Bryce Harper has done that in the past. It works for some hitters for sure. I'm just wondering, the issue where Nick Gordon stood in the minors was his lack of power at that position. And he hit like a... I think the most home runs he hit in one season was 8 or 9 home runs, maybe even less, across 120-plus games in the minors. I wonder, can he sustain this power? If he can, Nick Gordon is a different ball player, totally different prospect, because when he was evaluated as a top 100 prospect, he was evaluated on his defense, which has never been supreme, but it's been good. If he's not a good shortstop, he'll be a good second baseman defensively. And he was evaluated on, he's always going to find the ball. He won't be striking out a ton. He'll be getting on base a good amount. And he's fast to an extent, but not as fast as D. Not as fast as his brother. But it's just like, it'll be interesting to see the development for Nick Gordon. And if he takes off, his value. But we kind of talked about that last podcast. And the other thing I want to talk about, on the other thing is, is the Wes Johnson thing. I kind of want to understand, as a fan, why the Twins' starting rotation has been so good. I don't know what you've seen, Brent, but where is our rotation at in regards to the rest of the AL? Where do you think we're going to stand at the end of the season compared to other rotations in the AL? And is this success sustainable with some of our pitchers who've had some, you know, good results as of late? What do you think?
Well, I think that our top four pitchers have the capability to be really good and really special throughout the year. And I think Wes Johnson has a big part to do with that. Just the types of ideas he's bringing in. Like last podcast, you mentioned pushing off your heel when you're going off the rubber. Mm-hmm. And just different types of... Because when we brought in Martin Perez, we gave him an ultimatum when we called him. We didn't contact his agent first. We contacted him because of... Was it Levine's days in Texas?
Yeah.
He was with Martin there. And when he got the job here and now this coming year with bringing in Wes Johnson, he talked to Wes about different types of pitchers and different types of guys we could bring in. And he highlighted Martin to Wes Johnson. And when they called Martin Perez to join us, they had him talk to our pitching staff and our pitching coaches right away. And they laid out a plan for him for this year, and that plan was and is to throw less of his sinker and his curve, and throw more of a cut fastball. Mm-hmm. And that cut fastball this year has looked tremendous. And when they called him, they said, "Are you open to learning a cut fastball, and would you be willing to throw that?" And if he would have said no, Levine said on an interview, he would have hung up the phone right there and not talked to him anymore. But the fact that he was willing to, and just to change in his mechanics, pitching from his heel and different arm slots and that cutter, he has turned into a really good third or fourth option for us. And I think that obviously Berríos as our ace is in the top. I would put him in the second tier of pitchers right now for aces. But he is up there with the best of them. And I think that Odo has figured it out from last year. His past three starts have been incredible, just like Perez's has. Perez, going back to his last three starts, he has, on average in his past three starts, gone 7 innings pitched, 2 hits, and around 8 Ks. That's tremendous, especially for him coming from last year where he was. And I think that a really good third/fourth option is Cal Gibson. And I think that if we can get those four to continue at this rate and continue at this, even this pace that they're on right now, it's incredible what they're doing. Along with the lineup that we're throwing out there, like we talked about already, I think this top four rotation can continue to be one of the best in the bigs.
Yeah.
And I think, like I just mentioned, Wes Johnson has a lot to do with that. But going with our four pitchers here, Michael Pineda is I'm kind of done with him. He's coming off an injury. I just don't think he's going to improve. I'm going to give you a guy here that we kind of talked about earlier today. Zach Wheeler with the New York Mets. He could be a trade target that I think could be on the cheap. He's on the last year of his deal. He signed a 1-year deal, so he's on the last year. Making about $5.6 million for this year. He's currently 2-2 with a 4.3 ERA in 7 games. But he's got a 1.3 whip and 47 strikeouts. I think if we could trade for him, he would be a good fifth option for us. He's a lefty, which would be big. And I think that would be a big addition instead of having Pineda out there, which you don't know what you're going to get. I think if we can get Zach Wheeler, I think that would be huge. He's got a career 3.5 ERA, which is tremendous, and a 1.3 whip. I think that would be a big-time upgrade from Michael Pineda.
Yeah. Wheeler, that's a good fit. He's a good pitcher. He'd be, I mean, to this point, he'd be an upgrade over Pineda at the fifth spot, you know. But my issue with that idea is how much are you going to really value and use your fifth starter? And you can argue, okay, we'll help you get more wins during the regular season. Okay, but let's just think, can we win can we win our division with our rotation and our lineup now? I think we could. Right now, with the same exact lineup, barring no catastrophic injuries, we win a division. Okay?
Okay, I think I know where you're going with this.
Let's take that a step further. Why do we need a fifth starter in the playoffs, how many starters do you use?
I knew you're gonna go here. I know you're gonna go here. Let's just see into the future here. Just hang with us here, listeners. Let's talk about the Twins in the playoffs, just for a hypothetical reason here, in addition or adding Zach Wheeler to our roster. If we were to add him. In the first round, is it a 5-game series in the first round? Am I right? Mm-hmm. Or is it a 7 in the first round?
5.
So you're gonna obviously dish out Barrios in game 1. Okay, let's say we win game 1. We're throwing out Odo in game 2, or am I wrong?
We'll see, because, you know, Perez is an interesting look. Right now, the Twins, Wes Johnson believes that pitching Barrios the day before or the game before Gibson gives a ton of value to Gibson's delivery.
Okay, and that just proves to where I want to go with my next reason here. So if we get a 2-0 series lead with Barrios going the first game and whoever you want to throw out there in game 2, okay, it can be Perez, it can be Gibson, it can be Odo. Whichever one of those three you want to throw out there for game 2, throw out there on the mound, we win. Now we're up 2-0, we got to win one more in a 5-game series. I would throw out Zach Wheeler in game 3 to save the rest of those guys. If we lose, we throw out Barrios in game 4. We're going to win that one. I got so much confidence in Barrios right now with this lineup that if we throw out Zach Wheeler in game 3, we lose it, we're up 2-1, here comes Barrios or here comes Perez in game 4, and let's play ball. Do you have that same confidence if Zach Wheeler goes out in the third game, the same confidence in Michael Pineda?
I don't think, I know it's annoying to hear it, but you look at Baldelli's approach, there's no way that he's going to do that. Baldelli is going to live and die by his usage of his bullpen, and I personally believe that now you're seeing it. So there's 3 days, you play your game 1, you get your day off, you play your game 2, you get your day off, you play your game 3. A lot of times now, modern-day baseball, you're seeing two starters.
Oh, for sure, in the first round of playoffs. You're going Barrios, you're going Odo, you're going Barrios again.
And you can sacrifice. You're gonna have a bullpen that's not gonna pitch one inning if he's doing well. If Rodgers strikes out 3, he's pitching the next inning.
But we can buck the norm here, and we can throw out a Zach Wheeler in game three, and now if we win 3-0, we're going to the next series 100% fresh.
I mean, you could do that. It could.
Or am I overthinking this?
I would say that's not our need. Our need is to get a dominant right-handed reliever in our bullpen. Rodgers is our guy. He's a lefty. But again, I worry about Taylor Rodgers, as great as he's been, when it comes to the Houston Astros lineup. Why? Because where does Altuve hit? What side of the plate? Where does Carlos Correa hit? Where does Alex Bregman hit? And what do 3 of those guys all have in common against lefties? Some of the best. And Aaron Judge, and Gary Sanchez, and Didi Gregorius, all those guys have the same thing in common with Mookie Betts and JD Martinez. They're all right-handed hitters. And in the playoffs, in the 7th inning, we have, if it's a close game, I don't know if I want Taylor Rodgers being my go-to guy in every scenario in the playoffs. We need a dominant right-handed reliever. So I kind of wonder with that, but I want to break away from the trade thing for a little bit. I kind of want to come back to Wes Johnson. I want to talk about the things he is doing Now, his job when he entered the Arkansas University was to basically, for a lack of another term, maximize every person's skill set. So let's give an example. If you get Kyle Gibson, this is what he did with Kyle Gibson. Okay, we talked about the heel stuff already. Okay, the question is why also has Jake Odorizzi and Martin Perez and all those guys, why have they just elevated their games? And it's not just because the heel stuff, but there's other things like what are they trying to do with Michael Pineda right now, and what they already have successfully done with Odorizzi is another thing. This is another thing that Wes Johnson was talking about with his players in Arkansas, doing the exact same things to MLB baseball players. A lot of times when pitchers start to overstride towards home, what that does is two things. You lose hold of where your ball is going at the direction of command, and the other thing is you're not standing as tall. So when you're 6'7", like Michael Pineda, his best asset is his height. And when he's releasing a fastball from that height, it's a plus because of the angle coming down at the swing. But when he's overstriding, he's losing his angle. And what they're trying to do is what Odorizzi had issues with. The big thing, even more so than the heel thing, is that he was overstriding by about 4 inches last year. And they've changed that. And it's not something you can go up and watch a Twins game casually and make, whoa, that's a big difference. But it's subtle. And a lot of times pitchers think, well, the farther and harder I stride, as much as you want to be explosive off of your heel, you don't want to be too explosive. And you don't want to go too far down because you're losing the angle. Watch Jake Odorizzi pitch. He's staying more upright. His head, there's a lot less movement in his head. And his stride is shorter. And it's like, what is it? It's easier. It's like way less body contortion and body usage that he ever did last year. He was sweating like in games, even in April last year, by the first and second inning. And this year, I'm watching him pitch 80 pitches against the Astros in like the sixth inning. And he's not working his sweat. He's more efficient. And what Wes Johnson has clearly done to me is he's maximized the guy's fastball and when they're going to throw the ball, the heel, the striding, the thing that, look at the pitch usage that the Twins have done. When I was watching Paul Molitor and the crew last year and years past, the thing that Paul Molitor's group seemed to struggle with the pitching rotation especially was having a different game plan. Let's say Jose Berríos. He pitches against the White Sox last year. Okay, he throws his fastball at about a usage rate of 60% of the time. He throws his curveball at a 30% and everything else is a changeup. Okay, he would do that same approach because it worked against the White Sox for 7 innings and he had 8 Ks and it was a great start and they won the game. He would use that same approach against the Yankees. But what I'm seeing and what I'm looking at when I'm listening to all these things and I'm watching the usage rates and you go to Fangraphs, you cannot game plan for Jose Berríos, Jake Odorizzi, Martin Perez, Kyle Gibson at all. Jose Berríos last start, like 2 starts ago, he threw his fastball 80% of the time, and everything else was his curveball and changeup. His last start, he threw the curveball 50% of the time, and his fastball was used 40%. And 3 starts before that, he threw his changeup more than he ever had in 2018. My point being is, you can go to the same thing. I can talk about numbers with Jake Odorizzi. They're doing the same thing. They're changing their approach every time. And that comes from a Wes Johnson philosophy of, we're going to make you have 3 pitches, and you're going to have to find one working, and you're going to have to find something to complement it, and we're throwing more changeups and off-speeds than we ever had on 0-0 counts and 2-0 counts. The thing that Astros have done so well in the past is dominate on a 2-0 count because they expect the fastball to come because they got to throw a fastball, otherwise it's 3-0. And now we're throwing curveballs and changeups, and you know it's easy to say, why don't we just always do that? It's because the other guys in the past couldn't throw it over for a strike. Now we can.
Big time confidence piece to have that.
Yep.
If you can come 2-0 with a curveball or a slider or a sinker or a change or whatever it is, and you can throw that with confidence, man, that's special. And that's a lot of, like you said, that's Wes Johnson's mentality coming from the college ranks of my guys don't need five pitches. My guys need three, because college pitchers are pitching once every 5 days in college. Mm-hmm. So you have time to work on those things. And if you can dominate with three pitches, that's going to be very beneficial. But let's turn to here. Let's just talk about our last piece here. We can kind of wrap this pot up with some final thoughts here. You can make your case about whatever you want to make a case about. And then we'll just wrap it up here and we'll finish up. I think that my final thought here is going to be with, can the Twins get to 97 wins? I'm going to take the under on that. And I still have us winning the division. We are playing so well right now that it's going to take a lot for us to come All-Star break time and post All-Star break to be in second place, because the way we're playing right now is tremendous. Our pitching staff has been top of the line. Our batting 1-9, it's hard to find three outs in an inning
since
in our lineup.
April 14th, since Martin Perez got into the rotation, our ERA as a rotation, our runs scored against, and our hits allowed per game are all first in the AL.
Thanks for taking my final thoughts here. But I think that if we are able to go out, and I would do this before the trade deadline, if we can go out and add a piece like a Will Smith coming from the right side, or left side. Will Smith coming from the left side, whoever that's going to be to complement Taylor Rogers in our bullpen, I don't even think we need to add a closer per se.
No, I agree. Yeah.
If we can just get Will Smith or somebody who is a closer, but if we can get two closers who are left and right-handed both, that's going to do wonders for the end of the season, just because now here comes the ninth inning and they got righty, righty, righty. We have two options where we can throw out whoever we want to throw out, and they're going to be tough to hit, because Taylor Rogers right now is one of the best relievers in the game. We both have thought this for a while. He's not a big name out there, but give him a little bit, he's going to be one of the bigger names as a reliever. If we can go add somebody, and even if you don't want to do this, if we can add a fifth starter, I think that's just going to, even if it's a lower tier fifth starter or an upgrade from Pineda, I should say, that just gives, in the regular season, that takes innings away from Barrios. It takes innings away from those guys that give them the rest they need to come playoff time. Now we can go like you wanted to. You were against my Zach Wheeler starting game 3 in a postseason. That gives our top tier guys the rest they need to go game 1 and game 3 or game 2 and game 4 in the postseason, so their arms aren't shot come postseason time. Because right now, at the rate Barrios is pitching, he's on pace for 200 plus innings. And I don't think that's going to be beneficial for him.
I don't know. I kind of find it a little overrated, because you see like what pitchers did in the 90s. They pitched 250 innings, and that wasn't even a Cy Young worthy. And you go back even earlier, and then you're like, why did Cy Young pitch 600 innings or 500 innings every year? But I think that's a little overrated. I think it's more important not to wear out your bullpen, in my opinion, because you wear out your bullpen early in the season because your starters can't go along. You really... We'll take this into effect. You rather have your starting pitchers be more worn down than your rotation, than your bullpen come playoff time. One, because there's a reason why you have your starters. They're your best pitchers. And then there's a reason why your bullpen is your bullpen. Like, tends to be 95% of the time, your bullpen, at the end of the day, is not as talented as 1-4 of your starters. Tends to be that way. And that's why they get delegated to the bullpen and they find their role. But my point is that when you have your bullpen pitching 40 innings individually come All-Star break, and they're ending with 70 or 80 like Paul Molitor teams in the past have done, what does that give the advantage to all the teams that have faced that bullpen guy? I understand, how about the counter-argument? Versus the starting pitchers, they pitch more. But that doesn't work, because like you've seen the Cy Young guys that have pitched 200 plus innings, they get better, because they feel more confident. And I just don't buy they're gonna break down. I'm more worried about the exposure, being exposed in the bullpen, and teams seeing like Taylor Rogers. I don't want Gary Sanchez or Aaron Judge having 15 plus at bats come before the playoffs even start against my closer. You know what I mean? I'd rather put out Matt McGill like in the ninth inning because in July 8th we're winning by 5 and we don't need to put our closer out.
So let's hear. This will be our final statement here. I want to hear your thoughts on. I guess it can be a hot take or it can be a little debate here to end it with our final thought here. Does Jose Berríos win a Cy Young this year?
He said at the beginning of the season, before it started, he was going to get 20 wins this year.
He's on pace for, 28 wins right now?
Yeah. He said that. Like, he didn't have to say that. He wasn't asked that. He said, I'm going to go and get 20 wins this year. And the dude is 6-1 this year, and minus a little collapse of our bullpen in Philadelphia, he could be 7-0. And with that, I think he's at 50 innings pitched, roughly, maybe an inning off, give or take. And he's at roughly 50 strikeouts. And we're 35 games in, we're 21% of the season through. Or not, basically 20% of the season through. Look at the Cy Young Award winners, and I love that you asked this. It's a great take to talk about. Look at the Cy Young Award winners from the last 20 years. I had a chance to look at that, 30 years. And consistently, you can draw a conclusion that it takes 19 to 22 wins in between that, and you're probably going to be the Cy Young Award. It's used every year, 22, 21, 19, a casual 24 from Randy Johnson, a 24 from Frank Viola in the 80s. But if he gets 20 wins and his ERA is even close to like a 2.8, it's going to be hard to not give him the AL Cy Young. It's going to be really hard because Chris Sale has already ruined his chances to win the Cy Young. David Price.
He's out the window. Yes. Price, out the window.
David Price is probably not going to win the Cy Young. Mike Minor, as cool as he's been for the Rangers, he's not an ace, I'm sorry. And the White Sox, no. No pitchers. Matthew Boyd's nice from Detroit, but they're not going to the playoffs, so he's not going to get it, and he's not that dominant yet. Who else has been? Tyler Glasnow has been phenomenal.
Does Verlander win it?
Verlander's been great. He's been great. But I wonder, do the Astros try to, like you kind of were mentioning, he's a guy that maybe you want to save him and limit his innings because he's so old. You know, maybe that's, you kind of want to, hey, Verlander, you could get 8 innings here in June 20th against the Athletics, but let's just hold you to 6 because we're going to beat the Athletics by 10. So I think Verlander doesn't. I think it's between Tyler Glasnow and Berríos. And Blake Snell is not quite there, but I really would love to see a Tyler Glasnow Berríos showdown. I hope they face each other this year. I think they're the best pitchers right now in the AL.
With that being said, I also think that he's going to win the Cy Young. So that's going to be a hot, hot, fun topic to see unfold throughout the season for Mr. Berríos. But with that being said, we are an hour and a half into this podcast, and we don't want to talk years off here. We could go on forever talking about this kind of stuff.
Yep.
We're going to end it here. Again, we thank you for listening to the Minnesota Sports Insider podcast. We'll be back next week. We'll have more on the Twins. We'll have some stuff on the Vikings, Timberwolves. Next week, we'll kind of be an all-around pod. We'll talk about all our sports teams. Again, if you want to send us something to talk about, you can slide in your DMs on Twitter at Inside Minnesota Sports or our email, minnesotasportsinsider@gmail.com. So again, thank you for listening to the Minnesota Sports Insider podcast. We'll see you all next week.